Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Tom Meredith.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Galesburg Live. Thanks for being with us here this morning. Our guest, we're going to do the full show with our guest this morning, a little dialogue. He is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Carl Sandburg College. Anthony Law joining us here this morning. Anthony, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning, sir. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks. I know it's very early on a Saturday morning, so I appreciate you coming in. Well, a lot of obviously crazy stuff has been going on in over the last few weeks after the death of George Floyd, but it's nothing new, number one.
No, no.
I think that's a big thing. And a lot of people, it seems like some people think, oh, this is new. This is a new thing. No, this is since this country's been here, these are things that have been going on. And so we just kind of wanted to get a dialogue started and about things going on. You know, one of the things, a lot of terms out there going on during this whole thing. And the big one is systemic racism, the
yes,
systemic
sir.
Thing.
Yes, sir.
Kind of give me a definition, because obviously, okay, I hear the word systemic. It's like, okay, it's within the system somewhere. But what are there specifics, you know, to that particular phrase or term?
Well, I like to explain it like this. When I was a kid, every morning at school, we said the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. The last line is liberty and justice for all. Now, liberty is the ability, the right to be able to do and live your life. Justice, of course, to be treated fairly. And the most important thing of that is all. I think when we talk about systemic racism, systemic failures, because that's what it is, it's a failure in the system, is anything that is set up as an obstacle to that all. And no, so when people are asking for, when they're asking for the system to be revamped, they're not asking for more than anything that we've ever been promised. And that is pledge allegiance to the flag. And in return, as a citizen of the United States, which I believe is the greatest country in the world, on paper, we're the greatest country in the world. Where the failures are, of course, is in that system. In the pursuit of being the favorite of the greatest country in the world, we need to revamp some things. So you look at that and you say, where are the system flaws?
And now, we're talking not justice system.
We're talking about the justice system,
but other.
We're talking about policing.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about opportunities.
Okay.
We're
okay.
Talking about, because it's bigger.
Yeah.
Than George Floyd.
Right.
It's, if you put it on, and that's the problem with some people as well, they're looking at the incident with George Floyd and they're dissecting it. And right now the pursuit is, who was George Floyd? And so as anybody, you sitting there, me sitting there, anybody that's listening to us, if I look hard enough, I'm going to find faults in every person. Who is perfect to be that martyr?
Right.
So when we look at George, we're saying, okay, he was this, he was that, he was this, he was that. Looking for justifications for the 8 minutes and 46 seconds that we saw, so that we don't feel we feel better than that. But it's bigger than what we saw. The system that allows somebody who has taken an oath to serve and protect, and that will do something so heinous on camera, in front of witnesses, that system itself is flawed. This man, and bigger than the man, but the fact that this man, I'm not going to call him an officer, because as a former police officer, what he did is an injustice.
And it's not the only thing in his history as a police officer.
He had a history of these kind of incidents, not to this level, but he had a history. The system failed to detect issues and to address those issues. And not everybody that stands up and holds their hands up and makes a pledge to serve and protect deserves that badge. It just does. I mean, there are flaws in every system. I think what's going on right now is the system, when it comes to law enforcement and the abuse of power, is because it's become so public. And because 9 times out of 10, I can be discriminated against in housing. I can be discriminated against in an opportunity to get a job, or to live where I want to live, and those different things. And as unjust and unfair as that is, that's one thing. And when it comes to these arrests, people are dying because of the system's failures. That is why law enforcement and these arrests and these the things that are happening because of the abuse of power have been in the front. Because the people are not just getting there. There's been people that historically have been falsely arrested and falsely convicted right. And falsely imprisoned. We know that based on no other fact that their race was an issue or their financial status was an issue. But these are now resulting in people dying. On camera. So we've got to say, okay, if it takes, it doesn't take any more than that for me to say, okay, let's review these systems.
Right. Well, and within that, systemically, specifically with policing, you've got three other officers standing and watching. And probably, I'm guessing, most, if not all of any of these cases you can name, at least most of them, there was more than one officer nearby.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so where, and having been a police officer, is it like, are these unspoken rules that you don't turn in your brother in arms or what? I mean, within that system there? And then like in this case, they're talking about the attorneys for the others. Well, you know, my guy was a rookie, so he's not going to question a veteran cop and things like that. So there seems like a lot of things within there that need to change. Like, hey, that they need to be able to have the right to, because I'm thinking back even completely different situation, but the book and the movie based on Serpico
and just
the corruption there and the, you know, kind of like that, mm-hmm. like, no, you don't turn other cops in. Is that kind of the way?
And I mean,
I'm guessing not necessarily what you dealt with here, mm-hmm. but I'm guessing that's kind of the way it is, especially in bigger communities.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. One of the things it is, I mean, once you, it's such a job, a career, a life that, and I preface that saying by, when I say life, it's my own, you know, Blue Lives Matter. You've seen that. What other job do you know? You know, if I work at Caterpillar or I work at Sandberg, we don't have a slogan that says Sandberg Lives Matter, because I can go there, do what I need to do. Go home and do what I need to do.
Pretty certain nothing bad's going to happen
exactly.
during that time. There's, yeah,
life and death situations yeah. are not my those split second decisions do not determine life and death. So it is like I said yeah. once again. You know, I'm a supporter of good policing. I've always been. I'm a supporter of those that take that oath and take it to heart and go out there every day and do the best that they can. It's the ones that don't that are upset me. Because of that, that's not a career choice that you make, that you play with. So when we think of that, yes, there is. As a new officer, you think about it. And as society, we got to own some of that too.
Rookie in the NBA,
exactly.
whatever.
Exactly.
The new person here at the radio
exactly.
station, whatever, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
and let's be honest, we're entertained by cop shows.
Yeah.
We don't watch the movie where the guy goes out and buys kids ice cream. Or goes to the park or goes to the schools and gives those talks that help prevent kids from making bad
right.
decisions. What do we like? We got like the guy that goes and blows up the whole place.
Yeah.
So the reality is that it's the message that we send. And as a young officer, you go in, you say, how do I make my mark? You know, as with policing, one of the things I talk about with policing, and I used to teach a couple of criminal justice classes at Sandberg as well, is that we spend 400 hours learning how to shoot a weapon. We need to spend some more time learning how to communicate with people. You may go a career. There are officers, career officers, who have gone 25, 30 years and never shot anybody.
And possibly never even drawn their weapon.
Some of them have never even drawn.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. But every single day, you go out and you have a conversation with people. There are unwritten quotas. This many arrests. How do we look at an officer and say, this officer's doing a good job? If you have no arrest for the month, people are scratching their heads trying to figure out. And I understand that. How do you measure that? I understand the frustration. But the reality is we've got to learn the system has to be looked at a little bit differently to learn, okay, this officer here has engaged in his zone, in his area, whatever the case may be. He's engaged 100 people this month. He's become a vital part of the community that he polices. How can we look at that officer and say, you know, good job? When does the officer going out of their way to be a part of the community become the norm instead of the celebration? most of the officers that we do know on a personal level, we've established that personal relationship. But then if we don't know them on a personal level, or we were the ones we've heard about, are the ones that have done something wrong. That's the minority. You've got to believe that. There are fewer of those than there are the good cops. As a community and as a police department, we've got to join together to start celebrating those that are doing the things to build the community, because that's ultimately what police officers are. They're a part of the community with a responsibility to serve and protect. We got to stop looking at it as a separate entity as well.
Right.
But with that, we've also got to look at our officers and say, what kind of officer are you? What kind of, more importantly, what kind of person are you? Can you see yourself as a part of this community? If not.
Right. Or are you just here? Is it
exactly.
a job? Or
exactly.
are, yeah, are you
if
part,
if you're not part of this
you
community?
You got to be invested in the community.
This might not be for you.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. So, you know, I think when we talk about systems, people always get defensive. Well, if you say the system has failed, you're putting it all on me. No, it's collective.
Yeah.
The thing about this is it's a joint system as a community. If you have issues or you have concern, you've got to use your voice.
Yeah. Well, and you as a former police officer, you know, and I know you see this out there in memes or whatever, the people who hate the bad cops most are the other, you know, 99% that are good cops.
Yeah.
Because it does it to all of us. There's a great little quote out there from Chris Rock that talking about, you know, yes, you say most of them are good. And I agree, most of them are good. He said, but it's just like it, you know what, I don't remember which airlines, United Airlines, they don't let the one bad pilot out there say, you know, most of them say, yeah, I'm going to land this plane safely and all the passengers will be good. They're not putting that other guy in the cockpit saying, yeah, maybe we'll get it landed properly, maybe not. He said, that's the way it should be within the world of policing, which I totally agree. I guess, and we'll get into more of this. We have to take a break here, but I want to get after the break, kind of get into maybe, you know, what things can be done
to how do
we weed out the mm-hmm. bad guys? You know, because I'm guessing that's not an easy thing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you have to catch them before they get
in. And that's the truth. And like I said, not to get you, now you got me started. We can go, but you know, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
We got it there. That's where the system flaws.
Right.
When we talk about those things that need to be revamped. That's one of the things. It should not be that hard, because it's too important to have good policing, good officers, good systems in place, that if you and I are we're officers together and I'm doing something that's bogus, for lack of a better term, that you have a system in place that you can say, look, we got issues with this guy, where the union's not going to jump right on it. And I understand that unions, they have a role. Everybody has a role. I get that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you look at it systematically, you're doing us all more harm. If I got 1,000 guys in my union and I got 10 guys that are bad, you know what? You guys got to go, because you're making it bad for everybody else. You put everybody else at risk. And so you got to go. That's when we talk about that mindset. Yes, I love that we're going to be loyal to each other. But is my loyalty worth another death?
Right.
I mean, everybody's standing up and saying, hey, you know, I've talked to a lot of officers. They're standing up and saying, hey, what I saw for that 8 minutes and 46 seconds was sickening. Okay, that's good. It was sickening to me, too. What are you going to do about
right.
it?
Right.
That's especially as an administrator. What are you going to do? Don't come out here and talk to me. We can hold hands and we raise our fists. But when you get back to your office, what are you going to do? And more importantly, like I do with my students and everybody else, what do you need me to do to help you do that?
Right.
Because as a citizen, I want to be able to, everybody to be safe as well. So let's do this together, but we got to do something. We can't go right back to it. I don't come at that. If it happens that one time somebody doesn't know me and it happens to me, don't come talking about what a good guy I was. Right. I don't want to hear that.
Right.
You know, so let's
what have you done to try to change it?
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. Exactly.
We want you to know that Bates Collision Center is still here and ready to help if you need us.
If your vehicle...
Thanks for being with us here this morning. Our guest for the entire Galesburg Live this morning, he's the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Carl Sandburg College, former Galesburg police officer, Anthony Law. Anthony, good morning again. Thanks again for being with us here this morning.
Good morning, sir. Thanks again.
We were talking a little bit before the break about, you know, some things that can be done. We have this system in place, and we're talking policing in particular right now, and the things that can be done administratively, I mean, because it's about not just, I mean, part of it obviously now is weeding out those bad cops who have a bad agenda, that's not, you know, it's just a job for them and they're not about helping people and, you know, kind of being a psychologist, which is a big part of it. Mm-hmm. But not only weeding them out, but then it's the incoming. Let's not let them in the system in the first place. So what, I mean, is there things that have you seen? Have people talked? And I don't know if there's any communities talking about this, or maybe it's been done in some communities already. I don't even know. But what is it that you heard, or what things that you think can possibly be done to help that part of the systemic racism?
Okay. Well, I'll be honest. One of the things we have to look at, and it is a systemic issue. One of the things that we have to look at is I think our law enforcement community needs to look at, okay, what is redefine our role as community members, partnering with the community. How do you see me and how do I see myself? And then make sure those are in alignment first and foremost. I mean, a very small fraction of the role of our municipal police departments is arrests. There are so many other aspects that make a strong police department. And a lot of that is based on the prevention, which is, once again, interaction with the community. One of the things that I, in my time with Galesburg, which I enjoyed my time with Galesburg, it was right around the 80s and early 90s when community policing was the way that departments were going. The federal government funded community policing, so police departments were encouraged to truly become members of their community. Block parties, DARE, school resource officers were abundant. As politics came in and different, you know, people took over and different things, the funding ran out. Now, some departments took that and kept that going. They found the finances to be able to do that. A lot of mid-size and smaller departments, when the funding went out, they no longer had the resources to put officers where they had them, to have officers get out. When I was a police officer, we were encouraged, you know, stop that car, get out, walk around, get to know people. We don't have the resources now. As a matter of fact, I think Galesburg PD is even operating on maybe 5 fewer officers than they were 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So those resources are gone. And so it's tough. But it's also one of those things that, okay, when we talk about allocating funds, we need to, if we realize there's a fault with the system, we need to readjust, even with the budget we have. It, you know, we're going to figure out how to do what we need to do with the things that are important to us. And once again, it's a tough thing. It goes back to what I said before when we talk about those measurements. I mean, the police chief is accountable to the city council, city manager. All right. How do we measure your success? You know, it's much easier for me to come in and say you already had 50,000 arrests this year. Good, great work, because you had 45,000 last year. Then it is, you know, this year we helped 600 more elderly people with their groceries. How do I measure that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Or what we prevented.
Or we prevented.
De-escalated the situation.
I mean, how do you measure that? So since that's not measurable, we go right back to those systems. Okay, we encourage our young officers. You look. I have to, you know, evaluate your performance. How do I do that? Well, you go out and get 30 arrests for the, you know, you break the arrest record, because that's, I can look at that. That's tangible. You're officer of the month. Not saying Galesburg, I'm saying in general, you're officer of the month. But once again, how do I measure success? How do I take all of the things that, like I said, when you look at media and TV and movies and all that stuff. How do I, when I talk to kids who are interested in law enforcement, when I was teaching the intro level classes at Sandberg, why do you want to be a police officer? I want to serve and protect. Okay, that's the standard answer. Right. Give it to me. Why?
Yeah.
Well, I want to, and then those things come out. Well, they're all 9 times out of 10, they're not based on personal information or even experiences they've had with officers. They're based on what I see on TV and what I see in the movies. And so The reality is, when I get that, when I go through these educational journey and I get the degree and I get hired on with the police department, and all I know, or a lot of it that I know, is what I've seen in the movies. And then I get hired and I find out, hey, you know, guess what? We don't have an explosion scheduled for 3 o'clock this afternoon.
Right.
You know, yeah. What? We don't have a car chase or a foot chase, or you're not going to jump off a building today. Okay, so tomorrow, right? No, not tomorrow either. And it's like, wait a minute.
If you're doing your job right, probably never.
Exactly. But the reality is, once again, I'm not knocking the officer. What is right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, so we've the system, and that depends on the community as well. Are you receptive? If an officer does get out of their car and they come by and say, hey, how you doing today? Are we going to look at them like, what do you want? Now, granted, for most of us, we are not. Most of the community, I'm including as community, we are, because we haven't established that relationship yet.
Yeah.
And so there's got to be a trust, a mutual trust. Now, that doesn't take away from the people that are going to do wrong, that, you know, arrests are still relevant. You still have to make arrests because, I mean, there's still laws on the books. But as we build those relationships, you know, one of the things I loved about DARE is the premise that if I educate and engage early enough, I can prevent future drug addicts. I can prevent future criminals. I can prevent these things because I've established relationships early enough. You know, they did studies on DARE. There are some people that are advocates for it, say, hey, DARE was a success in some levels. Did it keep every kid from using drugs? No.
But if it kept one.
Exactly. Because of the impact that one drug addict out of control makes on the community. I mean, it's one of those unmeasurable things, you know, it's a wonderful life scenario. Mm-hmm. We could have the one person go down one path and see all of the hearts that were broken, all of the crimes that were committed, all of the death that became because one person decided to use an illegal drug, and then two people, they sold it to two more people, and so on and so on and so on. And then we can see the other path where they never tried it and they ended up being, you know, king of the world.
Yep.
We don't know. We can't do that. So, it's a tough measure. But I think it's important. You know, the sad thing is when we got away from that, and even though I've been away from law enforcement as far as Galesburg PD for 25 years, I like to believe that my impact, and sometimes it's shown to me, because I still have people that will come up to me and say, Officer Law. And I'm like, well, it catches me off guard every once in a while. And they'll say, you know what? I appreciate what you did. And I'm like, what did I do? And sometimes it's simply, I had a conversation. It's just, I like to do that. Does that make me Officer of the Year? Of course not. I don't know. I don't know. What is that measurement? But those conversations and those interactions stuck with people. And some of those kids are adults now. They're all the way adults. They're not young adults now. They're adult adults. I'm old. And they'll have those dialogues with me. And I say, okay, did something right. Not everything, but did something right, you know?
Yeah, and that leads to talk a little more about prevention again and things that, you know, ways to change the system to have prevention, which, as you said, is kind of tough. But we'll talk more about that. Quick break here. It is 7:46. This is Galesburg Live.
3.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL.
Good morning. This is Galesburg Live. Tom Meredith, your host. Our guest this morning, Anthony Law. He's the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Carl Sandburg College, a former Galesburg police officer. Having a conversation here this morning, and we were talking about prevention, one of the big things in policing. And you kind of touched on the fact that it's tough because of budget cuts and everything, and you can't just have officers out, I guess, quote-unquote, walking a beat like you used to. But that things like that are such a big thing, and times have changed, and I know there are still some officers who are homegrown, grew up here and invested in the community, but that, I mean, it used to be that was about all of them. You know, you're going back, you know, Russell grew up, you know, 70s or 60s, 70s, 80s, that, you know, like everybody, even though I didn't grow up here, I knew who a lot of the officers were, and just like through my friends from here, and they, you know, they knew everybody, and even that right there, just that relationship, that in some ways was prevention. Like you said, you know, there's some bad people who are going to do bad stuff no matter, but they might have even stopped him from doing something one time by having that conversation with him. And you know, maybe it was fewer arrests. It was just those conversations. I think that's such a big thing that could help. You know, like, hey, you got to be invested in your community. You got to get to know these people. I don't care what neighborhood they're in.
And that's true. I mean, the reality is, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
I mean, if I've grown up especially in a smaller community, if I've grown as a member of this community, I've got my friends, I've got all those things, and next you know, I'm a police officer. That can be a positive thing because, once again, I've got those relationships. I'm part of the community. I understand the little nuances that make Galesburg a great place to live. For me, that's just my view of it. But then again, I've got those relationships. I know all the nuances. I know everything, you know. So that affects my ability to do the job as well, because not only do I know my community knows me. And sometimes they're being a police officer is tough, because we're asking, and I'm not making excuses. Once again, trying to bring perspective, not making excuses for those that abuse that power. There's no excuse for that. I want to make that very clear.
Right.
There's no excuse for that, and I'm making excuses for that. I'm just trying to explain from that perspective that when you're part of a community as well, then sometimes that being too close.
Yeah.
And then people, you come in the door, hey, Billy, we know we grew up together, man. Yeah, but what you're doing is illegal, and I've got to do my job. Well, no, come on, man. We've been together for blah, blah, blah. And then you got to deal with that. So there, it's a double-edged sword. Some people will respect the fact that, hey, oh, that's Billy. You know, I'm bogus. That's Billy. I'm not going to give him any problems. Other people like, I'm bogus. That's Billy, and he should give me a break. So it's not as cut and dry as people think. But once again, I think no matter what, being an engaged in the community makes it even for those that would choose to be abusive of their power. If I'm engaged in this community, and I want to see the best for this community, and once again, it makes that difficult. It's what's important to the individual. And it's bigger. It has to be bigger than the tagline, serve and protect and serve. Because the reality is, protect and serve who? You see, when you put that who on the end of it, am I protecting and serving myself? Am I protecting and serving my department? Am I protecting and serving my perception of what a law enforcement officer is? Or am I protecting and serving the community,
which is what it's supposed to
exactly.
be.
Exactly. But, you know, you have to put that on there, because you can't just end it with protect and serve. And that's I think that's where some of these guys that have abused this, the like I said, in a very small minority. I got to keep saying that, because the reality is that's who it is. But a small minority who's making a big impact.
Well, and they could make that argument why I was protecting and serving our department.
Exactly.
Or the other people that stood there and watched.
Exactly.
Well, we're protecting and serving our own.
Then you failed.
Yeah.
Because the reality is, once, even with those, let's talk about the George Floyd situation when we talk about protect and serve. The reality is, at some points during 8 minutes and 46 seconds, each one of those officers who swore that oath had an opportunity to say, wait a minute, I've got the entire public around here. The threat has been taken away. The last thing that we need is a situation to arise that's going to cause anything negative to come out of this, past what we're doing. So get up. Because once we had all of the cameras and everything there, this whatever our mission was initially has been altered. So somebody needs to look at the bigger picture and say, we need to make some adjustments. It's been altered.
Yeah.
You initially went to arrest a man who had been accused of using a fake $20 bill.
Right, I think, yeah, counterfeit, you know, money.
Okay.
And, yeah.
All right. It had changed.
Yeah.
It had changed. You had 8 minutes and 46 seconds to assess the situation and realize whatever my initial mission was has been altered.
And that's a long time.
That's a long time.
Because especially within the world of working as a police officer, where you're normally making a split-second decision where 3 seconds might feel like an hour to you. My goodness.
And not knocking the police officer. I'm saying in general.
Yes,
8 minutes and 46 seconds for everybody.
Yeah.
That's a long time to think this process is. You have four people.
Yeah.
Now, we're not talking about four officers. You have four people that are standing there while something is happening. And the situation is changing every second that a new person comes in. That dynamics change. 8 minutes and 46 seconds for somebody to say, whoa, whoa, let's get this up. Even if we get him up, put him in the car and get out of here. Because things are getting out of hand. 8 minutes and 46 seconds. I never liked the Monday morning quarterback somebody.
Yeah.
But it's hard to not do that when you see the video. And you see the situation. Break it down bigger than what's initially there. And you see the dynamics of that situation changing every second. And if you look at the officer's face with his knee on his neck, with no remorse.
Yeah.
Not affected at all.
Like he was just sitting there having a conversation exactly, with the other officers.
Not right? affected at all by any of the cameras, any of the public yeah. interaction, anything. That is criminal in itself.
Yeah.
That's not what we do. That's not what should be done. I mean, the reality, he was standing there. I watched it. I looked at his face and I said, you know, if you to put it in perspective for people, I said, think about the most embarrassing thing or the worst thing that you've ever done in the privacy of your own home or whatever the case may be. And then think about this. Would you still do it if there were 20 people around with cameras on you telling you to stop? 99.9 of us would say, no, I'm going to get up. As soon as I saw the first camera, I'd be like, uh-oh, been yeah. caught. There was no
yeah.
remorse.
Yeah.
And there's no excuse for the other three to sit there and say, I've just got on the job. I didn't know. Whatever you have to say,
yeah.
you got no excuse for that. None. And this is just in this unique situation. Like I said, I think this was so traumatic and led to where we are right now is because we talk, like you had mentioned, that split second. Now, we're not talking about police officers. We're talking about human beings now.
Right.
8 minutes and 46 seconds of doing something so vile that it takes somebody's life. And I don't care who George was.
Well, and I think that's a big
execution.
Thing. Yeah.
We saw a public, like I said, yeah. and that's the, you know yeah. what, to be honest, when they look at the faults, when they search for the faults in George, that's the easy thing. I can easily find the faults in anybody you want to talk to. People can Google me and find faults in me. Even from this conversation and dialogue, there are going to be people that are upset. I get that.
And that officer had just as many faults and shouldn't have been on the job even.
And even bigger than that, once again, it's, when we find faults in the human being, that's one thing. What we need to be looking for is faults in the system.
Right.
There needed to be something in place. Even if we're subduing a person, when they get to a certain point, check and balances. Somebody, tap out. Check this man.
Yeah.
At some point, how long do we subdue somebody? We should subdue. If you've ever been in a fight, you know, even the boxers. 3 minute round. That's a long
time.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So if you're in a confrontational situation, 8 minutes and 46 seconds?
Yeah.
Man, even when I was in my best shape, 8 minutes and 46 seconds is a long time. Somebody check this man. Even if the officer that was engaging the public would have looked down and said, sir, are you okay? Hey, man, he's unconscious. Get up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because there's even a length of time from the time he finally went out mm-hmm. until he died. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when he stopped talking. Yeah, that's it. Well,
and I get that, you know, when some people are in situations, they'll yell out. And I can say, we're talking about this, but this is bigger than this. I want people to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
When people say, I can't breathe. And then people say, well, you know, if he couldn't breathe, he couldn't talk.
Come on now. Yeah.
I can't breathe. But, I mean, even if you say it, and I doubt it, well, he might be teasing. He might be playing around. He might be trying to get up the upper hand of him. There's four of y'all.
Yeah.
Get him up.
Yeah.
Get him some water. Take him in.
Put him back in the car.
Exactly. Let the justice system do what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
But at that point, it was all out the window.
Yeah.
Like I said, and the my concern is greater than the officers. It's the system. What systems and how are we going to change that so it doesn't happen again?
Absolutely. Anthony Law joining us here this morning. Anthony's going to stick around with us. We got another hour of this coming up. We'll talk some more. This is Galesburg Live. We got a news update coming up and more with the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Carl Sandburg College, Anthony Law, here on Galesburg Live. Good morning. Thanks for being with us here this morning. This is Galesburg Live. Continuing our conversation with the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Carl Sandburg College, the former Galesburg police officer, Anthony Law, joining us here this morning. Anthony, good morning again. Thanks for being along with us here
good
today.
Good morning, sir.
Well, talking about, spent the last hour talking a lot about, the police and problems within that, the systemic racism there and things that maybe can help change and what we can do as the public to help change. And now, and there, obviously it rolls into many other parts of life and, you growing, I don't care who you are, that you've obviously grown up and you've seen racism and we talked about this off the air a little bit from, when you're young to, yesterday, whatever you've seen it and it doesn't matter where either that you're going to see it. But I think the one thing we can all agree on, the world is never going to be Camelot. It's never going to go away. Why? Because we're human beings and we all have faults and there's always going to be somebody, no matter what we do, there's always going to be somebody. And racism is taught. You're not born with that.
Nope.
There's always going to be somebody teaching their child or whether they mean to or not, that's always going to be there. So I think, we know it's always going to be there, but it can get better.
It can get better.
And maybe some of those kids can be untaught, I think has happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think has happened. And so that there's some big things. So let's kind of get into that a little bit. Because I see a lot of people on Facebook, looking at myself, this and this, what can I do? So I would ask what can I do? What kind of things can I do to help? Because people say, it's so funny. I've seen people. Why, when I see black people, I always say hi. It's like, well, I found that kind of humorous. Like, that's not really stemming racism in any way, shape, or form. You're trying to make yourself feel good. And that's another thing that it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be about me as a white American making myself feel good. That's number one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, to be honest, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, but then again, it's as simple as having those dialogues.
Yeah.
It's as simple as communicating. It's as simple as a self-evaluation. Why do I have these issues? Why do I look at this person in a certain way? Why do I feel this way? Like you said, you're absolutely right. We talked about it off the air. I have faced discrimination and racism since my earliest memories. How did I let that affect me? And, I think for me, I looked at it for what it was, an attempt to prevent me from being the best that I could possibly be. And that's that, so I look at it like, okay, for some reason, and this came from my mother, and I appreciate the teaching that I had of my mother, but the reality is that if somebody doesn't like you for something that you haven't done, it's because they're threatened by who you are, or more importantly, threatened by who they see that you could become. And so my approach to that is simply this, okay. If it's threatening, and when I say threatening, I'm not talking about physically. I'm talking about whatever potential that somebody has. Because ultimately, and that once again, if you're threatened by somebody's potential, once again, you look at it and say, okay, that's your own insecurities. But I use that as, I've been personally used that as motivation to be the best that I can be. Now, that's by my definition and my definition alone. Other people may have a different vision for me as an individual, but it's one that you take. That's one of the things I try to teach my students as well. Is you determine your best, and then it's your responsibility to pursue it. And so I think that's part of the things. There are some things that you just can't overcome because the systems in place are so strong that, you have to learn how to adapt. And that's not easy because one obstacle can become another, and so on. I'm not making excuses, just the reality of a systemic racism. That's how it's set up. If you achieve one goal, then there's another obstacle. And I mean, that's when we talk about systems, that's when we talk about it being bigger than individuals. And so I don't know if that kind of answered that, but that's.
Yeah. Well, a lot of it is something you kind of mentioned, starting in the home, because mm-hmm. you talked about your mom and your upbringing. So that enabled you to, okay, here's my attitude. Yeah, they're going to try to keep me from doing this, but that's my goal. That's what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. It's not that way with everybody, and it's understandable that not everybody can.
No.
Even and that would be a case even if they were taught, it's like, hey, here's the obstacles you're going to face. Just you got to fight through them. You know, and it's understandable why some just give up and like, you know what, I can't do. It's too hard. I can't do that. And that's understandable. They're trying to keep me down. I'm down. They did it. They succeeded. So I guess it's understandable why some people don't reach their goals because of those types of things.
And you know, I often challenge younger people, especially, but having working in college and doing some things in the schools as well, challenge them, if you don't like somebody, or you don't like somebody based on whatever, if it's based on race, with sex, or sexual orientation, whatever the case may be, ask yourself why. And once again, it goes to that self-evaluation. Why? What is it about them, and how does that affect me to the point where I choose not to like them or even hate them? You know, like you say, you see some of these hate crimes where, or you see some of these situations like with some of the rallies, and you see there's a lot of support. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of support. But there were still some people that had to drive around and say something negative. How does this group of people who have come together for a cause, how does that affect you in the into the point where you go get in your car, grab your friend, and decide that you're going to circle the square and yell angry things at them? How does that affect you? And then what did you get out of that?
Right. That's the big why. It's like, what? Yeah.
What did you get out of that?
Yeah. What was the point?
Are you guys driving away high fiving each other, thinking you've accomplished something?
Yeah.
If anything, the reality is you've empowered that group even more.
Absolutely.
And you prove whatever they've had to say, whatever injustices they felt, you proved it. You made it a reality.
Yeah.
Because you went out of your way to oppose them. You know, one of the things we talked about, social media and what that does, and everybody has a right to social media. I guess until you violate Facebook.
Right.
Then they put you in Facebook jail.
Twitter jail, whatever. Right, right, right.
You know, everybody has a right to. But the thing is, the thing that kills me is with everybody's right, everybody says I have a right to say whatever I want to say. And people have a right to think differently. I'm not asking you to believe or think like me. I'm not asking anybody to think like me. This is just me sharing my perspective from my personal journey. But what I'm saying is, why are you so angry? Because my personal journey led me to feeling this way. And why are you so angry towards somebody else? You know, an interesting thing, it's funny, and I had to go back and look through my stuff, but my son is in Florida. And one of his friends, I guess, contacted him and asked him, is your dad racist? And I was like, why? So, well, I noticed that, you know, a lot of the things that he's posted recently have been towards Black Lives Matter and support of systemic change. And I said, well, let me look back through my things and see what post I had that was even seemingly racist or that would be, you know, not inclusive. I couldn't find it. So I asked my son, you look through my stuff. See, tell me which one. It was the perception was that if. And for his friend, and I'm not knocking his friend, but that's just the way, that was a learn. That was something that was taught to this young man or young, you know. And the reality is, the perception was, if you stand for something, you've got to be opposed to something else. Now, I am opposed. I'm opposed to the current way that the system has worked. I think that that does need to be changed, and I'm willing to be a catalyst of change. I'm willing to help with that change, whatever little bit I can do. But as far as an individual, I'm not angry at any group of people based on whatever may make them that group. That's racist. That by definition, I'm mad at X, this group X, because they are group X, not because X has come over to my house and stolen something from me or taken away or hurt one of my family members or my child. No, I'm mad at X because X is X. Yeah. That's the definition of racism. I've never been like that. I've had the insight enough to be able to look and say, what issue do I have and where those flaws lie in that group that identifies as X? And it's individuals. And that's basically it. And that's what I love about our younger people, for those that allow themselves to look at things at the bigger picture, there are young voices coming up. I love the fact that 5 years ago, 5 years ago, 5 years ago, some of my students did a Black Lives Matter march. And that was simply because of the Ferguson incident. And they just wanted their voice to be heard. There were people that were, like I said, were terrified. Oh, my gosh, we don't want that here. Oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? Oh, my gosh, you know, and even, you know, I don't want to get into that. And I had people come to me and say, I'd rather you didn't do this. And I said, it's not me. It's my students. They want their voice heard. They're not going to be silent anymore. It's a new generation. So we had the march. We had no issues. We had about 300, 400 people. No issues whatsoever. We had more support, community support, than we ever imagined. They just wanted their voice heard. The same student, Dakota Williams, is one who was an organizer of that one. He and Olivia Grace were the first one. He came. He's graduated from his 4 year now. He came back and he was one of the in the first rally we had here. He and Autumn they organized that, and then Desiree and Amaya, and then Matea and those younger students. I love the fact that the young people are stepping up. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been in, and that's what's I'm tired. And that's my first rallies were when I was in high school, and then when I was in college, and then, you know, even as a police officer, when we talked about off the air the Rodney King situation.
Right.
Been doing this for 40 years. I love the fact, and maybe this isn't the answer. I don't know. I don't know what is. That's why I'm saying when we keep reacting to situations as they arise, you know, we realize now it's not the individual and it's not the situation, although I'm not taking away from the deaths, the lives that have been lost, but they are a direct result of a systems failure. When the same bad things, no matter what you're talking about, when the same thing keeps happening, it's the system. It's that simple. People throw out systemic failure and people like, oh man, that's just a fancy word for blah, blah. No, it's the reality. And that's where people say, well, how do we change that? We do the rallies to bring attention and let people know we're tired. The frustration level, and I'm not, now understand this when I say this, I do not condone looting. I do not condone damage of personal property. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, big difference between a protest
exactly.
And that. Yeah.
Awareness and criminal right. behavior are two different things. But I understand. I don't condone, but I understand the frustration. Yeah. Now, what I think has happened, people have taken advantage of the situation, and they're just as nasty to me as anybody else. If you go out and steal a TV, if you can watch that 8 minutes and 46 seconds and use that as a justification to go steal some shoes or a TV, you are wrong.
Yeah.
And foul as anything. I'm just going to say that.
And then the problem has become that just like, you know, like you say, for the police officers, it's like, okay, these few people make all of us look bad.
Exactly.
There's an element on the other side. It's like, well, see, these are, they're lumping in protesters mm-hmm. with
exactly.
all that too,
exactly.
which shouldn't be either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the reality is, I also understand the frustration.
Yeah.
The system has failed. Not saying everything, but for us, the fear is also this. After Rodney King, 91, we watched a horrific video. I was a police officer. I cried. I was the lone African-American police officer in a department that I loved. Liked what I did because it afforded me an opportunity to do the things I love to do in the community. I cried. I was so lost. So lost, so angry, I knew that the next day I had to put on that same uniform that had been horrifically misrepresented by these idiots in Los Angeles and go out in this community and smile in people's face as a black man. I cried. At least stood on the principle that justification is going to come because that was wrong.
Right. And never
92.
Did.
The acquittal. cried. Not because I'm a crybaby. Because the system that I was a part of had failed.
Absolutely.
The reality is, 30 years later, I'm still crying. I'm tired of crying.
Still fighting the same fight.
And these young people, they're not going to keep crying. So we've got to figure out something. And that's not the system. The fact that the system needs to be revamped is not a threat to anybody. It shouldn't be viewed as a threat.
Right.
You're telling me there's not a problem? This has been going on for 30. This has been videotaped. Now, let me correct that. Videotaped for 30
years.
Been
going on since the beginning of the country.
I remember, you know, to be honest, as a young African-American male, I remember looking in history books and the depiction of police officers during the civil rights movement. You think that didn't stick in my head?
Right.
When you see young little black kids being escorted by police officers just to go to school, or you see people beaten because they wanted to vote, or you see, and I'm not, like I said, people say, well, you know, that was then, this is now. What's the major difference? You tell me what the major difference is. And granted, I love this country.
Yeah, and I asked you that question off the air. We talked about that. It's like, okay, don't you think things are better than they were? Say, yeah, maybe in some respects, but we're still fighting the same
and
fight.
I love this country. And that's not a when I say systematic mm-hmm. issues, systemic issues. Excuse me, that's not a black white issue.
Right.
That's a system issue because I still believe too. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. I don't want to live anybody else. What frustrates me more than anything is when somebody tells me to go back to some place I've never been because I want liberty and justice to include all. And your response is not, oh, so do I, because I take that same pledge. Let's work on that together. Your response is, if you don't like it, go someplace else. Man, I ain't never been there.
Right, and that's not what it says.
That's not what it says.
Liberty and justice for all.
It doesn't say.
Yeah.
It says if you pledge allegiance.
Right.
We got you.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, and when you that's all I'm asking. You know, and people make it into important. The reality is, my all, in my mind, includes you too. The system fails me. The worst thing somebody can say is, well, you know, the police officers kill white people too, unjustly. And you're not mad about that? You're more mad at me because I've said no more than you are about, and you bring me statistics that prove that? Now, percentage.
That actually, you know what, that is a really, really good point. That it's like, well, why aren't you mad about it?
Why aren't you mad?
Yeah.
Well, then they sit there and say, well, I mean, I'm not mad at you.
Yeah.
I'm not telling you to be mad.
Right.
I'll be mad. I'll tell you what I will do. I'll be mad for you. If you can bring me proof that this has happened, I'm going to be mad for you.
Well, because then what you're saying, the system changes. It changes it for everybody.
Changes it for everybody. Yes, it's not the things that we're trying to get changed are not exclusive to African-Americans.
Right.
Then we're saying is things need to be different. Liberty and justice for all. That's all I'm asking for. That's all we're looking for. That's all. All. Is a big word. It's an inclusive word. The separation that people do, the things that make it exclusive, that's on them because of a misunderstanding. The pledge is taught to little kids. It's not long. I've been saying it since I was in kindergarten. But if you look at it word for word, it's inclusive. All I'm asking you to do is pledge allegiance to this flag, and I got you. And that's where, when you talk about Cap and his kneeling, all he was saying is, the pledge that I was taking, I'm not getting what I was promised to me. So when people talk about disrespecting the flag, and personal, it's personal preference. I'm a veteran. I'm an Army veteran, combat officer. I'm going to stand because I choose to. But that's my right. But if you kneel next to me, I'm going to support you in that because you choose to. And that's your right. Like I said, I'm not here to live anybody else's life but this one that God gave me.
Absolutely.
But in the pursuit of that, where I've been led is to try to empower people to in that pursuit of liberty and justice for us all. That's it. That's what this is all about.
Anthony Law joining us here this morning. Galesburg Live. We're going to take a break for news. Come back with more. We'll talk a little bit into Black Lives Matters and Black Lives Matters. That's two kind of separate things that we need to understand. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into that a little bit coming up. It is 8:34. This is Galesburg Live. Good morning. This is Galesburg Live. Tom Meredith, your host. Thanks for being with us here this morning. Our guest is Anthony Law. He's the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Carl Sandburg College, and talking about all the whole situation in the country, racism, systemic racism, and the police and things going on. And, you know, one of the things, Anthony, social media has just become, for whatever reason, now it's become, you know, and going back to Rodney King, can't we all just get along? Well, now, no, apparently you can't have your opinion, I can't have mine, or we got to hate each other, which I don't understand. And social media has amplified that. And it's just, it's like, I mean, I kind of have to be on there because we post stuff on, you know, on our page. Otherwise, I really would rather not be on there. I liked what it was early on, but anyway, that's kind of beside the point. But, you know, one of the things that's come up, a lot of talk about Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I see a little bit of both sides of it, but there is one of the things we need to clarify is there's Black Lives Matter. There's, you know, like for instance, the protests we had here and what it's saying. And then there is the Black Lives Matter organization, which is, it's something to, yes, at its core, it was, you know, kind of the same message, but it's something completely different. I think people need to understand, like when you're here and the protest we did on the square here as saying Black Lives Matters, that really has nothing to do with that organization. This is, you're just, it's making a statement. And so here it comes like, okay, all lives matter, blue lives matter, it's like, And I think what we need to understand is you understand that, and most of the people I say that are protesting, holding those signs, understand that as well. And I even said to you off the air, I said, what if, you know, it would have been blam, Black Lives also matter. And you brought up a good point that those people that have a problem with Black Lives Matter, it wouldn't have mattered. Mm-hmm. Would still have a problem with it, whatever.
Of course, when you look at those who have altered the phrase Black Lives Matter.
Right.
They're not adding an also to it. What they're doing is they're removing the black.
Right.
And putting their own thing in there. And I mean, simply this. Okay. Like I said before, and we'll talk about this, is if you have an issue with the system, let me know. Because that's where my energy is focused. Changing the system. So if you have an issue and it doesn't, and you feel excluded from Black Lives Matter, the phrase Black Lives Matter, then let's face it. Let's address it. Let's talk about it. Because reality is, if we go and face and try to make those systemic changes that need to be made that affect more than just African-American people, then we're stronger if we go against it together. But the reality is, if you're so focused on black part of Black Lives Matter, that you have to feel so excluded that you have to put an all in there, or you have to put a two in there, or you have to put an also in there, or whatever you want to put in there, you're kind of part of the issue. Because, like I said, it's not exclusive. There's nothing in that statement that says it's exclusive. That's where I struggle with.
Because you're talking about a particular issue.
We're talking about an issue. Like, we're talking about
woodpeckers matter. That doesn't mean robins don't matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If I put, you know, whatever the case may be, if it's something that I identify and those that support are working on at this point. You know, you talk about social media. And one thing social media does, to be honest, it gives people an opportunity to be hateful without having to look you in the face.
Exactly.
And so I can sit behind my phone or on my laptop or on my computer and spew as much hate for some. I use it though because I like to share my life. I like to share.
Right.
you know, the things that my students are doing, Joey and I are doing out in the community. That's what I use it for. And I use it if something is impassioned inside of me, I use social media to share it. Once again, social media is not evil. What social media is, it is an extension of the person behind the keyboard. So if you've got hate in your heart, social media just giving you a platform. What you're doing is you can be hateful to me without ever seeing me. Because the reality is, if you have those kind of issues, I'm not hard to find. And I'm not saying that like looking to I want to fight.
Right, right.
I'm not, that's not that serious.
Yeah.
But to have that dialogue. See, social media has removed that requirement.
Yeah, there's no dialogue. It's just back and forth.
I can say what
you're
I want
to
say.
You're stupid.
Exactly.
You're an idiot. You're an idiot.
I don't have to have dialogue. I don't have to be respectful enough to give you an opportunity to say what you want to say, then reply, so that we can come to some resolution.
Yeah.
No, I can just throw out something crazy or something angry. Not crazy. I'm not even gonna put that label on people. I can throw out something angry, or use it as fact because it's in black and white, and sit back. And some people even use that that's what their goal is, because I'm angry. Remember, this is an extension of who I am, especially I look at Facebook and Twitter, because you put your face on there. You put your face on there. So you're like, yeah, this is me. It is you. I mean, but what purpose does it serve? If you're truly looking for resolution to fix things, that's why the rallies are important, because it gives people an opportunity to get out amongst each other and have dialogue. Now, one of the challenges we're having right now, of course, is the quarantine.
Right.
You know, but the reality is we need to have those dialogues. One thing I like is, you know, town meetings. Identifying our concerns in a room full of people that are either like-minded or not like-minded, but at least we're having dialogue. One of the things that we need to do as well is don't listen to have a response. Listen. To hear what the person is saying. Like a social media, boy, we read that quicker. I'm already typing while I'm still reading it. I'm ready to, you know. And then,
or we see a headline. We don't listen to an interview or read a story.
Exactly.
We see a headline. Like, okay, what I'm saying is based on that, which probably doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what was actually said.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm waiting to see. You know, I don't know if this interview is going up on social media. I'm waiting to see. People are coming after me.
Yep.
I don't care.
But they won't have listened to it, though.
No,
either.
They won't have listened to it at all. And they've already made some decisions. Before they fully listen to
exactly.
it. Exactly. And they've taken out whatever is already inside of them. See, that's one thing. That's why I don't take it personal. Because if you can take somebody saying that they love this country, they appreciate those that are doing their job, that you know, and you can look at it either two ways. You look at it, first of all, as they're going to see. Some people say, well, as a black man, I expect you to do X, Y, and Z. Okay? And then there are other people that are going to say, well, as you know, if you don't like it so much, leave. I'm going to get all those opportunities. People are going to present me with all kinds of options. You know, the reality is I'm willing to put in the work. I can put my phone down and do whatever it takes to make the system inclusive of everybody. That's what I usually throw back. What are you willing to do besides type on your phone?
Right.
Because the reality is for the system to be changed, it's going to take all of us. And you can't tell me that you can watch another video, that you can watch, that you can read another article, that you can see another person lose their life, and tell me, with all honesty, it's working the way it is now. And that's not putting fault on the police department. That's not putting fault on any one entity, because the system is bigger than that. It's bigger than the law enforcement, because then you got to go into the judicial system. Then you've got to go, even though it's bigger than that. Then you've got to go into our legislature.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. When you point at a single officer, you're missing the point.
Right.
It's the system.
Yeah. How did that guy end up here in the first place?
And more importantly, what happens in the judicial system? We've got bigger issues.
Yeah.
We talk about, you know, the criminal, you know, we talk about the prison system. We talk about, like, the legislative system. You know, we talk about it. It's a systematic reform. And that's going to take all of us. And that's going to take, one thing people don't like to hear, that's going to take people voting.
Yeah.
And the thing is, the one thing that the challenge we have with voting, and I'll stress this enough, that's the simplest thing that you can do to impact what's going on. And we still have people that I'm mad, but I'm not going to vote because I don't have any. I don't like the president, or I don't like who's running against him. The reality is, if you've ever looked at a ballot, there's other things on there, other offices on there that directly affect you
absolutely
even more that you're missing.
And those are the elections with even fewer people, just like the local elections.
Exactly.
Those are the kinds where even fewer people vote.
Fewer people in the local elections. Yeah. It's like, man, so you're not voting. You choose not to vote for your city council person.
Which it affects your everyday life more than the presidential election.
Because you don't like who's the president.
Yeah.
If that's not dumb, then I don't know. We need to rechange the definition of dumb because that doesn't make any sense.
Anthony Law joining us here this morning. Take one more final break and come back with our final segment. This is Galesburg Live. This is Galesburg Live. Thanks for being with us here this morning. Our final segment, Anthony Law is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Carl Sandburg College, joining us here this morning, having a conversation. And, you know, what can we do to change things? I know, you know, it all starts, we talked about the fact that it's never going to go away. We'll do what we can to make racism go away. But we're human beings. We're all flawed. So it's not going to go away. However, there are things, that, and especially in teaching your kids, you know, one of the big topics over the last, you know, probably at least 10 or 20 years has been bullying.
Mm-hmm.
And what falls within that at school? Racism is within that, too. Mm-hmm. So I guess, you know, one of the big things is teaching your kids, hey, when it happens, that's when you need to step up and step in. Mm-hmm. Because it's included with any other bullying, whether it's because, you know, sexual orientation, color, whatever it is, you know.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things, too, is, you know, as adults, you know, we want the best for, as parents, you know, hopefully most of us want the best for our kids. And reality is we've got to teach our kids that the world is getting smaller and smaller because of connection, the access to the world. And so because of a smaller world, you're going to be working with and interacting with different, a very diverse, you know, world. I don't care what field you go into, what experience you're going to have, it's going to be diverse. So what we've got to challenge our kids is, and what we've got to put on them is, I challenge my students, so in a diversity component of what I teach at Sandburg as well, is I challenge you, if you're to find somebody that initially you didn't see anything in common, get to know them and find out, you know, what commonalities you have. Even if it turns into a lasting friendship, great. If it doesn't, at least you know something about somebody, because ultimately that's going to help you grow. You know, we're human nature. Human beings are, it's human nature to be around like people. You know, that's just it. It's our comfort level. We go into a room, we identify with whoever we identify with, and we go up to them for, hey, how you doing? You mind if I sit here? Challenge yourself to, okay, where would I probably not be as comfortable sitting, and sit there and engage those same people that you would as that table that you would have sat there. Now, a lot of us don't get that opportunity. But I mean, if we do that and we teach our kids that, the reality is we're preparing them for a future that is going to be theirs regardless. I mean, it just is. Even the kids that are, if you look at Galesburg as a community, the diversity in the 30 years that I've lived here has changed. It has evolved. I mean, when we talk about diversity that makes up Galesburg, when we talk about something simple as the language is spoken in Galesburg, it has changed. I mean, when I initially came, we basically, when you talked about diversity, we're either talking about white, black, or Hispanic, Latino. I mean, basically. I mean, there were other demographics as well, but I mean, those basic three. Now, we're international.
Yep.
We always have had that little taste of international because of Knox. Now, even Sandburg, we have a strong base of international students. But, you know, we have two colleges here with international. We have, like I said, we have people, adults and families that live here internationally. So we've got to look at it. Like, now we can look at it and say, well, once again, we can go into that old, well, why are you here? And this is ours and blah, 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 blah. But the reality is, what can we learn from the diverse community we've become? How can I, if anything, encourage your kids to learn something about a different culture. You know, when they go to school and they have students in their classroom from the Congo, from Nigeria, from Brazil, engage.
Now you got what, even Russia?
From Russia.
Other, yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah.
This is who Galesburg has become.
Yeah.
So engage those students. Find out what you can. That's only going to enhance your student, your child, to be honest.
Well, and one of the great things, you know, cultural diversity, I mean, that's one of the great things about this country. It's like, you know, we get people out there saying, oh, I don't see color. And it's like, well, then you're part of the problem if you don't. Because there are differences. There are cultural differences. But that's what you embrace. That's what makes this country great. That's why there's so many different dialects around the country. There's so many different looks to people. That's what makes it great. Mm-hmm.
And that's the reality. I you know, it bothers me. But the people have, of course, it bothers me to the sense that not where it upsets me, but I mean, when people say I don't see color, because the reality is it exists. And I mean, not seeing color is avoiding what's there. The reality is, let's see it and celebrate it. That's all I'm asking. Let's see it and celebrate the individuals. I don't want to be seen solely as an African-American man, but the reality is being African-American is what makes me me. I mean, the experiences that I've had in my life, some of those were based on the fact that I was also, not solely based on, but the fact that I was also an African-American. Some of the situations, one thing that I don't have the luxury of doing, I don't have the luxury of not seeing color, even at Sandberg. And I think we're growing and we're changing as diverse as well. But, you know, several meetings that I go into, I'm the sole person of color. That's my reality. I mean, I don't let it hinder me from doing what I have to do. I don't let it bother me. It doesn't bother me. Let me clarify that. But you think it's not my reality?
Right.
And for most people,
how can you not see?
Exactly.
It?
Yeah. For most of my coworkers, to be honest, they've probably never been the sole white person in a room full of 30.
Yeah.
But for me, that's my norm.
Yeah.
It is.
And again,
what it is.
And the bottom line, the end of that, no matter what you say, Mexican, African, American. We're all Americans.
Exactly.
Which is, again, that's what makes the country.
And like
we're
I
from
said,
everywhere.
And like I said, I know it goes back to what I said initially. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. Liberty and justice.
For all.
For all.
Absolutely.
I'm pursuing that all. And all is inclusive of everybody.
Absolutely. Anthony Law, always appreciate you taking some time with us and great dialogue here this morning. Thank you. Thank you so much. And
thank
for
you,
what
sir.
You're doing in the community as well.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening.